Hello, and welcome to Blank Plate, a podcast for Swifties with an appetite.
I'm Sarah, and I used to be a little kid with glasses and a twin-size bed.
I'm Laura, and I'm a mess, but I'm a mess that you wanted.
And we've got a blank plate, baby, and we'll write your name.
Should I change my intro, too? I was supposed to be sent away, but they forgot to come and get me.
I think we could both use that this week.
Yeah. So much new content to get into.
Oh my gosh. Well, Tortured Poets Department, the is here.
So
and we've listened. So we are still processing.
It took me a solid 72 hours to, like, process a lot of this. I'm not going to lie to you guys.
Yeah.
That first 24 hours,
it was intense.
It put me in a place.
I feel like I was, like, fell asleep singing, like, down back crying at the gym.
Mine was, I hate it here. It's like, oh my God, you guys.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay.
So Sarah and I had a listening party on Friday night, five and a half hours long.
5.5 hours. Also, so we both stayed off of social media on Friday because we didn't want any spoilers. The only thing I allowed myself was technically I could still get on Twitter, because I knew she would tweet about it. I wanted to be able to wake up and read whatever she wrote. And also, we knew there was going to be a 2 a.m. surprise, right? Like, that's what we were all expecting. We were actually right for once. We were right. And so
yeah.
That morning, I woke up at 4:30 to pee. And I was like, I got to check my phone. What's happening? And, of course, she did a double album. There were like 15 tracks we had not heard of yet. And I almost could not go back to sleep. It was because I read
you?
All the track names. I looked at the length and I was like, oh my God, Laura and I are going to be up all night. And we basically were.
Yeah. Yeah.
We basically were.
I mean, we started at 5 and weren't done until 10:30. And we were serious. We did not stop. It was a marathon. Truly
honestly,
a marathon.
It didn't feel like 5.5 hours.
No. I mean, I could have, like, if we started at 8 a.m., I could have done that for another 12 hours. Like, I love this stuff. Yeah. But it was late. Like, it was a work day and it was late, honey. Like, it was a long.
Well, and then I had to drive home.
Yeah. Sarah and I at like 1 a.m. Yeah,
I got home around 1. And then like by the time I like wound down and actually fell asleep, it was almost 3 a.m.
Yeah, how could you like shut your brain off after that? That's too much. God. Well, next time we're going to just plan a sleepover.
We should have done a sleepover.
We should have done that. So hindsight is 20/20. Mm-hmm. So you guys, the release of Tortured Poets dropped double album at 2 a.m. called The Anthology.
Yes, and, which I love.
I love that. And I think, like, in comparison, album one and album two, album one is definitely more like Jack production and a little bit more Midnight's 1989 Taylor's version vault songs sort of vibe.
I feel
there's
like
a different flavor to it, but it's...
There is. I feel like the Jack songs, especially in the first half, we noticed a little bit of like a grungy country vibe.
Like a saloon tavern.
We're at the saloon.
Slide guitar. Yeah.
It's a Western. Yeah. It made me think of like some of these tracks are almost like Fearless tracks, but with Reputation lyrics.
And like, with like synth pop, like Reputation / 1989 vibes / Midnight vibes.
Yeah. Like, But Daddy, I Love Him and Thank You, Amy.
Yeah. Very
like those
country.
Could be on Fearless or Speak Now.
Yeah.
But they're even more vicious than anything she probably wrote at that time.
Oh, they cut. I mean, this is not a song that like 16-year-old Taylor would write. So the lyrics are very biting. And anyway, the second album in comparison is much more Aaron Dessner production, more folklorian, Evermorian. And I mean, this is all us folklore girlies wanted, because there were rumors way back ago that there would be a third album called Woodvale. And I feel like this is our taste of Woodvale.
Yeah, this is like the Woodvale we never got, is the second half. And I really do feel like they are two different albums. The more I spend time with it, the first half, the Jack half, is quite different from the second half.
Yes. Yes. When I had friends over this weekend, they were talking to me on Saturday. Oh, what do you think? And I was like, well, what did you listen to? And they said, well, we've only listened to the first album. And I said, okay, I'm going to have to ask that you listen to the second album and then we can talk, because you can't base the whole thing off of the first. It's a different vibe in the second album. Also, like, now knowing that there are two track fives.
Yes.
There's honestly, so many things.
Knowing that How Did This End is the second track five, there have been a couple times now where it's like, I just, today when I was working, I just had it on. And then How Did This End would come on. And I'd be like instantly in my feelings and be like, God, this song is intense. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's a track five.
It's so heartbreaking.
Yes.
So I think, and another thing, like a brief explainer about this album and like some common themes getting into it. We had this conception that the Tortured Poets Department was going to be our breakup album about Joe. There's a little bit about Joe, but 95% of this album is about a 10-year-long situationship with Matty Healy of the 1975.
Yeah.
Okay.
And guys, I would like to clear the air and make my apologies, because I was deeply wrong about her feelings for this man.
I knew she had it bad. I knew it.
You knew it. She was down bad for Matty Healy.
Really. And we're going to unpack all that. We're going to explain the situationship from our research. But like, Sarah and I did the best thing ever. So if you haven't listened to this, you definitely need to find Taylor's In Summary poem, which she posted on the back of the vinyl. And this is something that she does a lot.
By the way, is beautiful. I am so glad. So I'm one of those crazy people. I ordered all three of the special vinyls online. I pre-ordered all of them, but I didn't pre-order the manuscript edition because I knew I'd be able to get that whenever. And I'm so glad I didn't, because the day of, I went to my local Target and I got my Phantom Clear edition, which meant I brought it with me to our listening session so we could actually open it and look at it.
And it was so beautiful.
It is so beautiful because the like liner notes lyric booklet is bound into the center of it. So the whole thing is actually like a book.
Yeah.
And yeah, it starts with an intro poem by Stevie Nicks.
And we had no idea why.
Right. Which, by the way, not only is Stevie Nicks mentioned in Clara Bow, the song, but it was also making a lot of sense because Stevie Nicks like wrote songs with her ex.
Yeah.
Silver and then Springs. Also like sang it to him on stage.
It's so Taylor coded. It's crazy.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then at the end, there was an In Summation poem. Let me see.
That was a necessary, like, I'm so glad that we did that, because we were clued in about, oh, this album is not what we thought it was.
It wasn't quite like reading the ending of a story before reading the book, but it was like reading her thesis statement about it.
Yeah. I mean, she calls like going from house to cardiac arrest, from the oven to the microwave. And like all these things that basically she described her situationship with Maddie Healy that we will unpack as a manic phase. And then we press the first track of Fortnite. And the first mm-hmm. line is, they were supposed to send me away, but they forgot me. Like,
yeah,
we're like, what is, what?
I was supposed to be sent away, but they forgot to come and get me.
Which, like, and we were gagged at that first line.
We were like, wait, wait.
That is the opening line of this entire volume of work.
And we were sort of clued in that there would be psych ward vibes because of the video that she had released announcing like the rollout of the music video mm-hmm. and record store day. So she posted this online and it took us from the Midnight's cubby, closet, where I don't know where we are. And the door opens and we are in a very, very, very cold hallway that is all white. It is not giving English department. Mm-mm. It is giving psych ward.
Yeah.
And well, yeah.
And then the fact that she says, let's hear this again.
I was supposed to be sent away, but they forgot to come and get me.
And of course that calls back immediately to Hits Different when she says, yeah. Like, is that you or have they come to take me away?
Yeah. So the perfect entrance into the new era, the ending yeah. of Midnight's, the beginning of this new era, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I just want to run down a brief timeline of this Maddie Healy situation.
Please do.
So here we go. And I will apologize to the 1975 fans out there. We are going to roast this man.
Yeah.
It's one of those things like, can we separate the art from the artist? And in this case, like, I like some of the 1975, but I'm not a huge the 1975 stan. Like,
mm-hmm.
and I know there's people out there that love Maddie, but
I haven't spent enough time with the music to mm-hmm. have an opinion, honestly.
Well, here's how it all began.
Okay.
In 2014, so that is 10 years ago, headlines started to speculate that Maddie Healy and Taylor Swift were perhaps seeing each other because she had showed up to his concert, and there were many songs to be rumored about Taylor, Falling for You, About You. Mm-hmm. Apparently they had many trysts. She was seen wearing the 1975 muscle shirt, and he was seen wearing her 1989 shirt.
Mm-hmm.
He did an interview where he said it was so lovely to meet her. Ooh. And then later, after some time had passed, Maddie made a comment to the media that said that he would be emasculated to date her. So we don't know where things went awry there, but there mm-hmm. was a little bit of a tryst, mm-hmm. some sort of sexual situation happening right there. Okay.
Also, I saw something on Twitter the other day about there had been a report a long time ago that no one really paid attention to. With someone who is like somehow in this circle, that at some party, Taylor randomly kissed him in front of like a whole bunch of friends.
This is the thing. Now we have to unpack all of these songs to think to ourselves, is this actually about Maddie Healy? Because here's another yeah. thing. I know we think Harry Styles is the reason for style, but mm-hmm. you've got that long hair, slick back, white t-shirt. And I've got mm-hmm. that good girl faith. She mentions wearing a good girl, like a little skirt in I'm Gonna Get You Back. Anyway, mm-hmm. there's like, yeah. we have to go back. We have to go back and we have to yeah. unpack all of this because
yeah.
she but literally that said that she swirled him in all of her poems. So, right.
And yeah, and we've always been confused by the song Question.
Mm-hmm.
But now knowing that she apparently kissed him in front of a, you know, room full of people in a way that was kind of like, huh? Like, everyone yeah. is a little confused by it. That makes the song Question seem like it's about him.
Yeah. So, I mean, 1989 and Reputation, we now have to go back and be like, wait, is this about Maddie Healy? So anyway, mm-hmm. flash forward to the near future. And 8 years have passed, and Maddie has told interviewers that the 1975 was collaborating with Taylor on songs that were supposed to be on Midnights, but they never made it to the actual album. And seemed very, like, casual, whatever. A year later, Taylor attends the 1975 concert on January 12th, 2023, in London, singing her first time she had ever sung Antihero on acoustic. And she sings The City, which is kind of like a deep cut, but, like, this was before her and Joe were publicly announced to be over. Were they probably over? I'm assuming yes. But
probably?
I'm assuming. I mean, it sounds like even a year before that they started to collaborate, and that's where we might have some of these desires that she sings about in the album, which we can talk about. But
why did the collabs for Midnights never happen?
I think there's a lot of music that doesn't make it to the album for Taylor. I mean,
right.
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about Maddie and her in the studio, so pause that thought, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So then she performs randomly, everybody freaks out, and then April 8th, sources announce that Taylor and Joe are split, okay? In May, early May, Maddie is seen coming and going from Electric Lady Studios with her, coming to her shows, and the 1985 added...
1975.
The 1985. Oops. All these years, you guys. The 1975 added the song Question to their starting songs before their, like, actual set started. And Taylor added About You to... the Eras Tour music before it started. I remember hearing that and being like, that's there on purpose.
I kind of remember you talking about that. Yeah. And I was just like,
so
I don't know.
And I also, I'm guessing that in May is when they were recording Slut featuring the 1975 in the Electric Lady Studios. I think she was probably doing 1989/early Tortured Poets, because also, same time period, that's when Florence and the Machine was seen coming from Electric Lady Studios with her. So the beginnings of a new album, probably doesn't know the concept yet, but is starting stuff up, right? But I'm assuming that he was there because they were recording Slut 1975. Anyway. Then May 3rd, he's... doing that thing where he silently mouths, this is about you, you know who you are, I love you. And this is when the rumors started.
Yeah.
Okay. On May 21st, Taylor is in her bag. She says, oh my gosh, this is insane. I kind of just feel like telling you. And she could have literally just dumped it all right there. It felt like she was just going to, like, tell everybody. She said, I don't know. I've just never been this happy in my life, in all aspects of my life before. It's not just the tour.
And okay. So I remember when they were dating and these, like, this is about you, you know who you are, I love you thing happened. And it just seems so far-fetched that they were actually talking about each other to the point where we all were like, is this some kind of performative art piece? Because it just seemed...
Something like, is this a song? Yeah.
This just seemed like out of pocket. But now with this album, we know that Maddie Healy love bombed her.
Oh, yeah.
So if he love bombed her, of course he's doing this shit. And if we know that they had this, like, on off again situationship kind of romance for like a decade, and then you finally get with this man and he's love bombing you.
Of course, you're like, and he's everything's perfect. Yeah. This was meant to happen. I was supposed to break up with my boyfriend of 6 years. It's finally working out for us. This is what's meant to be. Like, totally. Yeah. I mean, like, totally. So then after this comment she made days later in Nashville, she did the same thing where she mouthed, this is about you. You know who you are. I love you. When she sang Cardigan. And then everybody's like, wait, is Cardigan about Maddie Healy? And people were like, no, no. But now we know perhaps yes. But anyway, Maddie was also seen at her Eras tour. I think it was like 14 shows in a row, including performing with Phoebe Bridgers and Lucy Dacus, which we saw. We literally saw him perform. And then in late May, there's a lot of backlash that's happening. And apparently Taylor says that she's just willing to burn her life down because she doesn't care. Mm-hmm.
She tells us that in this album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And through the lyrics of Tortured Poets Department, we can figure out that apparently Maddie was the one who stepped away. Sounded like he ghosted her.
Yeah. Which explains all of the ghost references in this album, but also the fact that the vinyl is called Ghosted White. I don't know why I never picked up on that before. It's not called Ghost White. It's called Ghosted White.
Yeah.
Because
she talks a lot about phantoms, ghosts, like all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then on June 6th, they officially have broken up publicly through a People announcement, a People magazine announcement. And 2 days later, this makes me actually think that question is about Maddie. He paints, or he spray paints, just like during his set, S-O-R-R-Y pauses, question mark, which is giving question.
Also, I'm sorry, but sorry with a question mark is not an apology.
No. Well, I don't think he's that sorry. So in August, Jack has his wedding. Jack Antonoff gets married. Mm-hmm. And Maddie is someone who works with Jack a lot. Mm-hmm. So you would assume that he would be there. Maddie's bandmate was there, but he was not there.
Yeah.
Sort of pointing to this idea that there's bad blood. And then on September 20th, this cut off on my notes, but Maddie announces that the 1975 is taking a permanent hiatus. And then 3 days later, Maddie posts this weird text referencing Lucy Dacus of Boy Genius. Mm-hmm. And Lucy says, like, the best comeback ever. She's like, you never hear from me ever, which is like, it's so good. And then this reaffirms that basically there's been a rift between this like group of musical friends. And obviously Lucy is on the side of Taylor. We don't know exactly what happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, this girl was down bad because she thought in her mind that this was like the universe working in her favor. She finally gets to be with her, you know, teenage crush, basically. And right.
Yeah. So the majority of this album seems to be about Maddie Healy, not about Joe, although there is plenty of Joe stuff. But I do have a theory about why this Maddie stuff is so intense for her.
Okay.
Because one thing I think about a lot is, who is Taylor Swift's Taylor Swift? Like, who does she listen to and obsess over and know every lyric and analyze and everything? And I'm sure there is no one she has to the degree that we have her in our lives. But I think the 1975 is somewhere on that spectrum for her.
I agree. I totally agree.
So imagine, like, for you or me, that we kind of like idolize this musician, this songwriter. We obsess over everything, but we're also in their orbit and they're interested in us. And we have like
he's a
flame.
Bad boy.
Bad
he's a
boy.
Total bad boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely someone she would go for. Okay.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff is wrapped up together. And then you do end up dating officially, finally, after like 10 years of like pining for this person and wondering what if. He love bombs you and then he ghosts you. Like, imagine if Taylor Swift did that to us. That's fucked up. Okay, if I were her, I would never be listening to the 1975 ever again. I'm sure he ruined that music for her.
I mean, for sure.
Have you ever been in a bad
relationship with a musician? There's lots of songs that are ruined for you, unfortunately. Let me tell you.
But yeah, so like, it's not just that he's another musician, Maddie Healy, who she dated for a short period of time and ghosted her. Like, this is an intense relationship on many levels for her, from what we can tell. And he love bombed her and ghosted her.
Yeah. And I think there was this on this inkling from what I got from the lyrics that he thought it was a valiant thing to save her from the mess that it would be to be in a relationship with him publicly.
Right.
And it's sort of like this, oh, it's a heroic thing that I'm doing. And she's like, dude, you're the smallest man that ever existed. So,
okay. Also, I have to say all this typewriter stuff is hilarious because
I love it.
Like in the song, the Tortured Poets Department, she talks about how he left his typewriter at her apartment and how she wants to be basically like, who the fuck uses typewriters? Like she wants to say that, but she doesn't.
Right.
And then she went and turned that into like the whole aesthetic of this album.
I mean, yes. I mean, Maddie Healy literally spews tortured artist, like all over the way that he performs, everything. Like it's just like so him. So it makes sense.
And honestly, like now that this album's out and we've heard it, if I were Maddie Healy and I'm paying attention, I should have been scared and known that this album was going to be about me.
I don't know.
I mean, all the typewriter crap, that should have been a dead giveaway to him.
I don't know.
It's so
funny. I don't know.
And just in general, that the whole, you know, look and feel and everything of this album was tortured poets and it's like academic and like all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the title track song. She's like, dude, we're not tortured poets. We're just modern idiots. Like,
I love that.
Like, get a hold of yourself.
I know. It's giving like, he's such a hipster and takes himself way too seriously. And she's like, dude, like, okay.
Right.
One thing going back to this whole timeline thing, I think we thought that there would be no way that there's Travis songs on Tortured Poets because of the timeline we sort of made in our heads for this.
Right.
So we were dead wrong. Obviously, if there's songs during and post manic phase with Maddie Healy, she also might have been writing songs during the beginning phases of her relationship with Travis. Like, I'm thinking like late May, June, early July, which is probably when she started talking to Travis privately, because they've made announcements saying that like they actually had some time before they went out publicly.
I think they only started talking in July.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It the timeline we thought was probably wrong. But I am so glad that, I mean, she made this YouTube short after the album was released and after the music video came out. Mm-hmm. And it was so lighthearted using the song Fortnite. It had like videos of her working out and Travis kissing her while she's cooking. And like, it's so like, it's basically her reassuring, like, I'm okay, guys. Like, I've moved past this. Like, I'm good. Like, don't worry about me. Because like the themes of this album are so dark. It's about loss. It's about depression. It's about obsession. It's about self-reflection. It's about death and everything. Like,
oh yeah. Like, yeah. Common themes of loss, insanity, depression, obsession, psych ward, self-reflection, death, fatalism, and suicide. And I want to say right now, we all talk about how Evermore is a Christmas album. This is a Halloween album.
This is an October album, honey.
This is a spooky ass album.
So
and
many
I don't
ghosts.
Know. This probably should not have been released in April.
I'm so confused. Well, I do have a theory about why it was April 19th, but I think it was pointed at Maddie Healy. So, Maddie's birthday is, Maddie's birthday is April 8th. So what's April 9th. So what's 9 doubled? Double album.
18.
Yeah. So.
But it came out on April.
The night of the 18th is when it came out.
Oh.
Anyway. So I don't really know. I think she had to get this out. I don't think she could have waited.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it would have been weird to get these while she's, like, probably engaged or, like, I don't know, very happy with Travis. Do you know what I mean? It's just weird.
Plus, she has 2 more re-recordings to get out, too. And the woman's busy, so.
Yeah. She's got a plan. So, But yeah, yeah, I feel like she's done these interviews sort of explaining some of the early tracks. So she says mm-hmm. that these themes are always like wrapped up in metaphors. So like Down Bad is talking about an alien abduction where like aliens take her and then like she's
so unhinged.
She's like so into it. And then it's like they leave her all alone. And then she's like, wait, like I like that. Come back.
Like it was weird and cool. Yeah. So yeah. She uses alien abduction as a metaphor for love bombing.
Yeah.
And then My Boy Only Breaks His Favorite Toys is like the story from a toy that's been tossed aside and like talking about the kind of like denial and delusion and toxicity that comes from like, well, you should have seen him when he first got me.
Yeah. He was you know, so like, into me.
He loved me. You should have seen him then. And then Florida is inspired by Dateline.
I love this.
Yeah, it's about like skipping town and going to Florida to start a new life after committing a crime.
I think
that's like about after like a heartbreak, wishing you could basically just start over.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
I think it's important for everyone who is critical of this album and they're like, it's just so wordy or like, oh, there's no real bangers on this. I don't think people understand that Taylor has said that she has needed to write this mm-hmm. album. This is something that I don't think she cares about the public reception of this album. I don't think mm-hmm. she cares if she wins any awards. She is someone, this is truly like her taking her diary and throwing it at us.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
guys.
And honestly, she's so big right now that this album does not
have an app name, guys. You can search for it in the App Store.
What?
Was that Siri?
That was Siri. Yeah. sorry about that. I thought Luke was home. I was like, that doesn't sound like Luke. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, the other thing is she is so big right now. This album did not need to be good at all.
No.
Like this could have been full garbage and it would have gotten just as many streams on the first day. And yeah, I don't think like she already has what 4 album of the year awards. Like she doesn't need any more right now. What she needed was to write these songs and then put them out. And then her true fans will love them and appreciate them. And I think that's all she really cares about for this.
And I think we need to stop putting her on this pedestal of like, how every album she's going to release has to be equivalent of the best new album of all time.
That's and she needs to free herself
of that.
Too high
of a pedestal. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this, I think this might be her releasing this and just saying, I'm making mm-hmm. music because I need to make music. Like this is what I do. So mm-hmm. here you go. Like anyway, what's our initial like thoughts on this album? We don't have to rank it in terms of like where it fits in our overall lineup of Taylor Swift albums, but like I personally will say that the morning after we listened, I was in such a weird headspace. Mm-hmm. I was overwhelmed with feelings. Mm-hmm. So I went through like the 5 stages of heartbreak myself. I feel like I was like,
yeah.
I was like, I couldn't believe this was all about Matty Healy. I was trying to process the fact that like, oh my gosh, so many of these songs we thought like, I feel like my head got turned upside down. And like, as someone who also was in a very long, very long situationship with somebody who was mm-hmm. a bad boy, musician, rock stars type of vibes, mm-hmm. except not because he's not a rock star, loser. This album, I am so happy came out when I am in a good place in my relationship because, oh my God, if this album came out the peak of that situationship, I would be unhinged. I would be mm-hmm. sending this music to people at all hours of the day.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, like I get a lot of this obsessive, like over anxious feeling that she has. They called it like her limerence album about Matty Healy. And like,
mm-hmm.
I understand what it's like to be slightly obsessive about somebody because they're so unattainable for so long. And then when they are, mm-hmm. they love bomb you. Like, I get it. I absolutely get it. I relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she's like just cemented herself as a true poet who just takes all of her experiences, mashes it up together and says, here it is in musical form. And I love mm-hmm. that. And that's my takeaway. think that she's cemented herself as a poet and an amazing songwriter. I mean, she's done so many literary references. I mean, like, I'm going to save this because I'm yammering. I'm just yapping. But I feel like she writes for the sake of writing now, not for pop hits or public approval anymore. And I feel like that is so cool.
Yeah.
So
I agree. So for me, I am giving myself time to really figure out where it falls for me. Because, like, I know the first one or two listens I had of Evermore, I was like, I don't know. Because I loved Folklore so much. Mm-hmm. And then Evermore came, and I was like, I don't know. And now I almost couldn't tell you which one I love more between those two. And Evermore, like, those two are at the top, top, top for me. So you just... You can't know on first listen, but I do love that it has this like Midnight / Folklore Evermore mashup with like a slightly different edge to it. I think she really painted a vibe for this album, like as she always does, but she really did with this one. And even though it has a lot of sonic similarities to things she's done in the past, I also think it feels unlike anything she has done before. And I'm not sure exactly why. I don't know if it's more about the highly personal content of it. I think it is kind of like what I predicted, which is like Folklore, but personal. But yeah, there's something about this one that does feel different. And it does feel like she threw her diary at us. Like she got everything out of her system by writing it in her diary and doing like a word vomit so she can heal and move on from it. But then she gave it to us. And I was saying in our group chat how I like had this image of it where it's like in Midnights, she lit the match like on the cover of Midnights.
Right.
And then this album is literally burning the house down. She's watching it burn. And smirking and walking away, like feeling like clean. And I sent that meme of the little girl in front of the burning house.
Just
like that is this album. Like she's like,
and
it's done.
What does that symbolize? So like, here's my theory about why this album sounds like a mashup of Midnight's Folklore, Evermore, all of that together. My theory is that this is a sonic mashup of those three eras when she was pining and lost and like in deep depression, and she is saying, I'm lighting that on fire, I'm closing it. What does she close the double album with? The manuscript, where she said the story isn't mine anymore. And she's written about in her post about how she's literally closing the chapter so that we can move on. And I feel like this was her kind of like nailing the final nail in the coffin and being like, that's it. Like,
yeah,
That's what we're getting, and then we're on to the next. I don't know what the next is, but it's something else.
Yeah.
So
I could see the next album actually being a departure from these sounds for her, maybe trying out some new producers and figuring out new people to work with and experimenting. But yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And also similar to you, like listening to this album for like 6 hours, then getting home really late, and then I had to get up early-ish the next day, so I didn't have enough sleep. All of that truly sent me into like a deep depression on Saturday.
I was in a bad spot on Saturday.
Yeah, like I was worried because my depression is also definitely affected by lack of sleep, and I was worried where I was like, oh no, is this album giving me like a weird feeling,
like,
am I not gonna like this album because this is now the feelings I have after sitting with it so intensely? But then Saturday night, I got to bed early. I slept for like 11 hours and I woke up feeling more refreshed and I'm feeling better now. And I feel like I can take it in again. But there's so much to unpack, and I do love it, and I'm excited to spend more time with it figure out where it falls for me and see which songs become slow burns for me, because that always happens.
Unfortunately, I feel like this is a very minimal skip album for me.
Me too.
Because originally, like when we first listened, I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to tell the difference between all of these songs. But now I know them. Like now I'm like, Down Bad versus Fresh Out the Slammer. Yeah, I know the difference. Like,
yeah,
I know which one I prefer.
Also, we need to talk about how I'm an album one girly and you're an album two girly.
Indeed. But we knew this about ourselves. Like, you're a Jack girly. I'm an Aaron Dessner girly. Like,
yeah, and I think part of that is that, like, the Jack songs are definitely more pop adjacent, and, like, they're a little bit more earwormy and easy to remember. And I do think that some of those have at least a little bit of a production difference that sets them apart from each other, even though it's still Jack.
I disagree. I feel like they all sound the same.
Like, see, I don't. I think all the Aaron songs in the second half, like, they are still blurring together for me. But I also know, like, Folklore sounded like that to me the first couple times I listened. But now I could tell you in literally 1 second what a song is from Folklore.
I feel like the issue, a lot of people have been critical about Jack on this album.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the issue is that we now know a lot of the tricks that Jack has up his sleeve because he's worked so much with Taylor. They have a good thing going.
Yeah.
And I feel like for some of this, it felt like Jack was falling back on his like tricks. Like I don't need another weird synth keyboard part. I'm good. But I also feel like even the chord progressions, we can get into this in another episode, but even some of the chord progressions, I'm like, okay, like this is, but I feel Aaron's is different. So it's pushing it a little bit.
A lot of Aaron's songs use literal piano parts from Folklore songs and Evermore songs.
But is that pointed?
But I think the Jack stuff is too. I think all of this very much, like, I truly believe that Midnight's references her earlier discography on purpose in almost every song. And I think this kind of does that too, kind of for like the same thing you were saying about the overall sound. She's making references on purpose. And sometimes she does that with the actual sounds and not just the lyrics. And unfortunately, that makes us go, huh, we've heard that before.
Right, right. And I think I'm excited if this is like sort of the final nail in the coffin or the final Lover House is in Flames moment. I'm excited for what's next. I do not see Aaron and Jack just disappearing from her life musically.
No.
But I think that if I could read between the lines, I think this is pointedly similar to those albums because it's a reflection of all of that and coming forward with some of the truth about what was going on with her mental state that we didn't understand at the time. Like, and now that this is exposed, we can move on to something new. That's sort of my vibe. But like, we still have Reputation. We still have like Debut to get through. Like, it's not like it's going to be like the next album is a house album or a rock album or something like that. But I'm excited to see some change. But that said, like, I'm such a sucker for those eras, so I don't really care. So
yeah, it doesn't bother me. I do think there are some new, like the Saloon is the new sound.
Yeah, that Western synth sort of thing is cool.
That's new. And actually a couple of the songs that I love, if you would have asked me, I would have guessed that they were Jack songs and they're Aaron songs.
I agree.
I actually counted like of like my top 10 today. It's actually like half Jack, half Aaron.
Yeah.
They've definitely my actual favorites.
They definitely have influenced each other a little bit too, for sure.
Yeah. But I would say as a whole, I prefer the first half to the second half.
Oh, I'm so in opposition of that. Basically, as soon as the Black Dog starts, I'm like, this is a no skip album. Like, this is a no skip album. Like, it's so good. Anyway, I do want to take a minute to go through all the literary, like, like this, I feel like I'm barely scratching the surface. These are just the obvious literary references that she makes on this album. Mm-hmm. She mentions the poets Dylan Thomas and Patti Smith in Tortured Poets. Jason said, "You're not Dylan Thomas. I'm not Patti Smith. This ain't the Chelsea Hotel. We're modern idiots." Like,
love it.
I love that. Mm-hmm. There's Greek mythology with her mm-hmm. mentioning Aristotle and Cassandra. Mm-hmm. And there's the Nancy Mitford, Idina Sackville thing with the Bolter, which you had researched for one of our earlier episodes. Mm-hmm. There's J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan in the song yeah. Peter. Mm-hmm. There's even like the Robert Frost of it all with Fortnite. So there's a poem by Robert Frost that says, "Good fences make good neighbors." And in Fortnite, here is now you're in my backyard, turn into good neighbors. So basically, like, good fences make good neighbors. Now you're in my backyard, turn into good neighbors. AKA, we set a boundary. I'm seeing you, but like, mm-hmm. we're just neighbors now, right? Mm-hmm. I love that. We have Romeo and Juliet mm-hmm. from The Albatross. Rose by any other name is a scandal. Like, she's just cooking. Let her cook, okay? And we have The Secret Garden in I Hate It Here. We mm-hmm. have A Wrinkle in Time from So High School. I mean, like, this is just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
Like, these are she the most off. Obvious ones. She went off. I love it. So, like, our girl is well-read, and she really didn't even go to college, so.
Right.
Like, pop off.
Right. It's so true. So what else is, like, blowing our minds on this album? I mean, the main thing is that we might now have to totally revisit the entire discography, knowing that Maddie
yeah.
was possibly the one from
yeah.
the one.
So she general. Mentions this. Yeah, she mentions this. She literally said this. Swirled you into all of my poems. Swirled you into all my poems, aka you've been in all my songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me go through a deep dive of like all of the 1975 versus Taylor Swift songs, do a comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here we go. Okay. okay. The one mentions, mm-hmm. if you never bleed, you're never gonna grow. The 1975 Robbers says, now if you never shoot, you'll never know. And if you never eat, you'll never grow. And Taylor said, smallest man that ever existed. Anyway. Then she mentions this scarlet maroon. Mm-hmm. And that absolutely floored me. In Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus. That make your memory fade from this
scarlet maroon. That's which a song I need like, to unpack more.
Yeah, like, okay, so is maroon about Maddie Healy? I'm assuming, yes.
Yeah. Well, and also Chloe or Sam or
so
Sophia
scarlet,
or Marcus.
So scarlet, it was maroon?
Right. But this song is clearly about him because he's known to be bisexual, right?
Yeah.
And this song is implying that, yeah, he could be kissing men or women.
Whoever, mm-hmm. yeah. And then we have the cardigan in August of it all. The 1975 has a song called About You. And this was the song that played before Taylor came on at the Eras Tour. Do you think I have forgotten about you is the line. And then, of mm-hmm. course, we have, because you were never mind, never mind. But do you remember? And then his response is, have I forgotten about you? Like,
so when did he write about you?
Oh, early. Let me just, I'll Google it. Written 2022. So.
Oh, okay. So after Folklore.
Yeah. Interesting. In Cowboy Like Me, she says, I'm never gonna love again.
Mm-hmm.
And That is a direct line from Happiness by the 1975 that says, I'm never going to love again.
Also, like, that makes more sense about Cowboy Like Me, maybe being about him, because she says a lot in this TTPD album, referring to him as a twin. So Cowboy Like Me is saying, like, we're two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Like, we're the same thing. And I really, I think she's saying that he's like her twin flame.
Yeah.
Which
move over Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah.
Yeah.
In closure, she said, yes, I got your letter. Mm-hmm. And the 1975 song, All I Need to Hear, they say, you see, I wrote you a letter. So I don't need your closure, or do I? Yeah. And then another in Death by a Thousand Cuts, Why Am I Still Writing Pages, is a song from the 1975 called Me and You Together Song, where I think the story needs more pages because I've been in love with her for ages. So she's still writing pages.
Yeah.
I mean, good God. Then in this album alone, she's done other things like The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. There's a line that the 1975 had that says, you said someday we might when I'm closer to your height. Are you calling out that he's a short king? I'm not exactly sure. Guilty as
well,
sin.
She's so tall that almost any man is short compared to her.
Right, besides Travis. And then here's Guilty as Sin.
What if he's written?
And the song by the 1975 is called Mine. So,
but she also has a song called Mine. And so I want to know how many of these are Taylor referencing him? How many of these are him referencing Taylor?
I think there's been subtle messaging between the two of them for a very long time. So that's the vibe I'm getting, because it's not only them referencing her stuff, it's her referencing their stuff. So another one is I'm gonna get you back. Hold on.
Whether I'm gonna be your wife or gonna smash up your bike, I haven't decided yet, but I'm gonna get you back. Whether I'm gonna curse you out or take you back to my house, I haven't decided yet, but I'm gonna get you back.
And the 1975,
that little banger. What? Oh, is it
your ice cream?
My ice cream truck is back. Sorry. get used to it, guys.
I thought that's what you were talking about.
No.
I thought that was like that banger. That's my ice cream truck.
No, I was gonna say that banger. Guess who produced that one? Jack Antonoff.
Jack?
Yeah.
I mean, duh, that's Jack written all over it. But the 1975, they said, all we need is my bike and your enormous house. She said, I'm going to smash up your bike, take you back to my house.
Yeah.
The lyrics are lyricing that these two have been.
I feel like I now need to, I need to do a deep dive on his music now. And see what I notice. Because I feel like I'm missing a whole other level of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth just understanding Taylor's influences too, because the 1975 was a definite influence in some of her music, especially in the 1989 era. Because that's when they were really like this indie band that was really cool. So yeah, it's definitely worth a listen. Let's talk about the lyrics that punched our guts.
Let's get into it.
Yeah.
So we already talked about the first one, which was, where is it? This one.
I was supposed to be sent away, but they forgot to come and get me.
I mean, fresh out the slammer on this album.
Within 5 seconds.
Yeah, we were like, pause immediately. Which, by the way, we did film our reaction.
What?
We did film our reactions, yeah. And that video will be coming to YouTube at some point once I've edited it. So,
it was wild.
Yeah.
Because we were even like, we can't pause that much because we're going to be here forever within 5 seconds.
Pause.
What?
Yeah. I mean, it really just sets the tone. She was supposed to be sent away to an insane asylum and they forgot to come get her. And instead we got this album. So I love it.
Oh my God.
Another one that really messed us up is this one from the title track, The Tortured Poets Department. At dinner, you take my ring off my middle finger and put it on the one. People put wedding rings on, and that's the closest I've come to my heart exploding. It's
talk
not okay.
Unhinged. We already know that Taylor has perhaps some marriage baggage with the Joe situation. And then this man did that?
No. It's not okay.
Unreal. Unreal.
That, I was immediately so mad at this man listening to this album. Track two.
That's all you need to know.
Mm-mm. Don't do that to her.
That's all you need to know.
Don't do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
One that has been in your head and my head over and over and over again. Now I'm down bad crying at the gym. So real.
So I love real. It. Have you cried at the gym before?
Not the gym, but I've cried a lot of places. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Have you?
I think I have cried at the gym before. Yeah. It is like a good way to get it out. You know, sometimes you just got it.
I will cry anywhere, but I'm not constantly at the gym, so it's not the place I would typically be crying. So anyway, but that is right. So real.
Yeah.
And then we have So Long London.
Oh, God. Okay, so here's one from that got us. Two graves, one gun. Yeah, this whole song is intense, but when she said that in that song, I don't know, there was something about it that just got me. It's intense.
Yeah. Also, this line got me too.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Are you going to work? Hello? I'm pissed off you let me give you all that
youth for free. Yeah. I'm pissed off you let me give you all that youth for free. You and I looked at each other what?
Damn. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that So Long London could be two middle fingers with the title, So Long London, bleh. But it's basically a mourning song, but also an acceptance of this is done. I don't know. We have to do a whole episode on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she updated those Five Stages of Heartbreak playlists with songs from this album, and So Long London is in the acceptance pile, which is lovely.
Yeah.
But the song is still devastating. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then we had
track five,
LOML. Yeah. And then LOML, which in my mind is the loss of my life, because she changes the lyric from "You're the love of my life," which is being said to her, to at the end, "You're the loss of my life." Till I die. Yeah. Classic Taylor, just switching up a little lyric at the end to completely gag us. So.
Really?
Which she also did in Clarabelle.
This was stunning. So.
I feel like
we need an episode on this. Like, we need a whole episode on Clara Bow. Like,
oh,
this
for sure. But I loved how it happened for me and you, because, you know, we're listening to the song and like, I was kind of thinking like, where's she going with this? You know? And then we had the bridge, we're kind of breaking down the bridge. We're like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's kind of intense. And we were being careful not to see ahead in the lyrics. And then we hit play again and it instantly was it. This. Okay. So yeah, play it for us. Which also, I love the way she says her own name in this song.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, we don't ever hear her say Taylor Swift very often. Yeah. Yeah.
We hear her say,
I'm Taylor. Stunned.
Like, that ending, like, made me tear up. And
yeah,
it was like she took the song Nothing New and just pushed it even farther. But yeah, cause in the song it starts with, oh, you look like Clara Bow. And then it's, you look like Stevie Nicks, which again makes sense why we have the poem from Stevie Nicks in the beginning. And then the end is you look like Taylor Swift. Oh God.
These
I love it.
Pivotal it girls of society. And she is just one of them. And mm-hmm.
And how she will society come and go.
Is always critical of the previous, right? She will come and there will be another one. Like, it is so staggeringly beautiful and sad. And
yeah.
I love Clara Bow. Okay, then we have How Did It End? So this one is the track 5 of the second album. And this one is painful. So here's the first one.
Come one, come all. It's happening again.
AKA, like, here we are. The circus is on. Like, they broke up. Like, here we go.
Yeah, another Taylor Swift breakup.
Yep.
Which,
couldn't keep a
which,
man.
Which, like, honestly, like, I can relate to that. As someone who's been through a few breakups now, like, you know, big ones, that is, like, what it feels like. It's like, well, here we are again. Another failed relationship, you know? And to hear her being like, just come on, everyone, come on, here it is.
And I love this verse that you pulled out from it, because it takes her, like, enormous superstar breakup to something more, like, approachable. So here's one of the verses.
Guess who we ran into at the shops, walking in circles like she was lost. Didn't you hear they called it all?
Ugh, that verse wrecked me, because we have all experienced this from one side or the other, but it's like literally running into someone at the grocery store and they look terrible and you're like, it's like, oh, so-and-so and I broke up. And then you go home and you tell someone and they're like, what happened? You know, like, how did it end?
What happened? Yeah.
Also, the melody of this song is tragic.
The
way she sings How Did It End?
Melancholy. It's so...
It's like that feeling of, like, just trying to take one step after the next, you know?
Yeah. It's heavy. It's melancholy. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's dragging. It's like... It's so good. And then we have The Prophecy. And this outro just hurts. So here's that.
So this, I think we only caught because we were also looking at the lyrics, because it says, I guess a lesser woman would have lost hope. A greater woman wouldn't beg. But I looked to the sky and said, and it sounds like it ends with, I looked to the sky and said, but underneath that whole thing, and we hear the end of it, is her saying, please. So it says, I looked to the sky and said, please. And
yeah,
it's just sad.
It's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the lyric that absolutely decimated Sarah. And I felt so bad in hindsight because it was such a marathon. We were at like hour 5.5 and all of a sudden Sarah is just like hands in her, like head in her hands. And I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. What do I do? Like, what do I do? What do I do?
No, you're fine. No. Yeah. So like a 5.5 hour long listening session. This is the final song. We're both tired. We're exhausted. And then she writes this lyric that instantly destroyed me. Like, this is the only time a Taylor lyric has made me like instantly burst into tears. So, okay. Can you play the clip and then I'll explain it?
Okay, here it is.
Afterwards, she only ate kids' cereal and couldn't sleep unless it was in her mother's bed.
Honestly, I still cry when I hear it.
Oh no, it's happened again.
Come one, come all.
It's such a detailed little throwaway lyric, but it's so
it is
honest.
It's like she did that thing that she does where she writes something so personal and specific that it's extremely relatable.
Yes.
And the reason this killed me is not because of the context of this in the song, because in the song we think she's referencing her relationship with Jake Gyllenhaal and like wishing she was older when she was with him. So she's saying like, in the age of him, I wish I was 30 and that I like made coffee in a French press every morning. Like this idea of who she would be at that age, and wishing she was like already there while she's there with him. But then when it ended, all she could do was eat kids' cereal and she couldn't sleep unless it was in her mother's bed. And this killed me because when my ex-husband and I split up, which short story, we split up because he realized he was gay. And so once we had that conversation and ultimately decided that we would be separating, he's still like family to me and we still joke about this, but we talk about how we ate grief cereal. As we basically literally had a conversation. It was like, well, we need to split up then. That's what we're going to do. And you're going to move to Ohio. And I was hungry, but I was like, I honestly can't fathom eating anything. And it was probably his idea, but he was like, let's go to the Dollar Tree and get cereal. I was like, yeah, let's do that. So we bought like 5 boxes of cereal. We got like Lucky Charms, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, like all that stuff. And especially in those like first 2 weeks following that, like all I ate was cereal and I could not sleep. Like it was truly the worst time of my life. And like the fact that, first of all, this is why we love Taylor Swift, because she does this to us. But like she released Folklore right after I can't believe I'm doing this on camera. Like what is wrong with me? I do have tissues. Even though I'm crying, I want you to know I'm also laughing about this. Like, I'm fine. I'm just I just have a lot of feelings.
It just hit a nerve. It hit a nerve.
Hit a nerve.
I mean, I remember this time of your life, and the worst part of it all was that we couldn't be with you because it was COVID. And like,
yeah.
And like, not only were you dealing with this immense amount of change and loss and stuff, but like no one could actually be surrounded by you. And I remember the thing that you texted me when oh my God, I'm going to cry. I remember when Folklore came out and like I was in my own world or whatever, and you were like, Taylor Swift wrote this album for me, I swear to God. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, yeah, totally. But like now I get it. So it's like a thing. But yeah.
Anyway, the other thing, and it really was like the eating cereal and not being able to sleep. Yeah. Like the anxiety and the grief was so intense. Like I remember if I did fall asleep, if I like kind of was waking up, you know, when you feel like you have to pee or something, and I was like, don't do it. Don't wake up. Because if I woke up, I would not be able to sleep again. And so it was just intense. So the fact that she wrote Folklore for me at this time when I really needed a sad album in the summertime. And then, you know, fast forward almost 4 years, and she has now given me this lyric that is so specific to my life and my own grief and heartbreak. And it's just, it floored me on so many levels. And like, that's why the song, The Manuscript, I love it on its own. But this is where we get these deep emotional connections to her music, because I will forever going forward never be able to like remove this association with this song and the way it made me feel the first time I listened to it. And that's why her music is so special, because she does this to us over and over again. But this song, The Manuscript, was the most intense I have ever experienced it. And yeah, I truly still cry like every time I hear that lyric, and it's probably going to be a while until I don't.
It's just like, if anyone's ever thought about writing music or anything, like music has this incredible way, especially when you're extremely honest in your lyricism, the way that Taylor is. If you can be honest about like those stupid things, like eating cereal and sleeping in your mother's bed, like someone somewhere, like that means that they are seen. Like they are seen as someone who has a shared experience with someone completely different, but that it's a universal thing that they're not alone in. Like,
yeah,
I'm so in awe of the fact that she's able to write these massive sweeping hits, but then write something like that and just like absolutely decimate us. Like,
yeah,
it's just like, that's the beauty of what she does, is she is so mm-hmm. honest and raw and beautifully specific about things that it hits.
Yeah.
It just does. So,
which by the way, if you have not listened to the episode of The Daily that they did, I don't know when it was, maybe in 2023 near the end, but they did a whole episode about Taylor and
Swifties. Like,
yeah. And it was like partially about the Eras Tour, but they were talking about like why the Eras Tour is affecting people so much. But then they talked about this aspect of her music where she writes things so hyper specifically that it's actually what makes it relatable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a great little episode. And I think the woman that they're talking to, which I'm sorry, I forget her name, I think she cries talking about it too, because she has My Tears Ricochet, that she has a very like personal experience that relates to it for her.
Yeah.
And Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that our whole listening session ended on that note is probably also why I was so depressed the next day. But I wouldn't trade it. No regrets.
Dude. Yeah.
It was an intense.
It was. And I feel even hesitant to even like name our top three, but like we wanted to name our current top three of the album. And of course, like we have 31 to pick from. So like that's extremely hard. And I know that this is going to change.
Yeah. Oh yeah. These are just top three, like as of right now.
Right.
Like 3 days after getting the album.
Yeah.
This will change, but this is a moment in time.
Yeah.
And these are our three favorites right now.
Yeah. So my three favorites are I Hate It Here, The Black Dog, and I Look in People's Windows.
You're such a
I'm an album too.
Second half person. The Black Dog is really high for me.
Yeah, it's really as soon as that started, I was like
yeah, but The Black Dog is a Jack song.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, my three favorites are Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, which right now I think is my favorite song of the album. Mm. And then I Can Do It with a Broken Heart because I love a depression bop.
Literally.
Yeah. And then Clara Bow because I really love that song, but also I also really like the way it sounds.
Yeah.
Because it has that electric guitar.
So simple.
And it's very simple.
Yeah.
I love it.
I debated putting Clara Bow on mine too. Like, it's just, oh, I feel like, again, we need a whole episode on it. We need a whole episode on it. Like, it's so poignant. It's so beautiful. Tour.
Wait, we got to do our skips.
Oh, yeah. Skips.
Okay, so what are our skips for this album?
Because for me, it's Fresh Out the Slammer.
Really?
Yeah, it's giving nothing.
I thought you liked that when we first listened.
I thought it was going to be a bop. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. So, not for me.
Okay.
I understand why it's in there. I understand the context of the storytelling that it brings, but it's just not giving much for me. So for right now, that's a skip. It may change. So.
Okay.
And then also The Bolter. I feel like where it is in the lineup of album two, I'm just sort of like tapped out. And I do have a theory about what The Bolter is about. Like, but I'll save that for another episode. It's just not, it doesn't quite hit for me. So.
Okay. Well, for me, the only true skip on this album is Robin.
I'm confused about Robin. I'm very confused.
Why is this song here?
It's giving Seven.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm still a little baffled about it. I'm wondering if we're going to get more explanation about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, like, not just the content, but also the song itself. I'm like,
yeah,
doesn't do it for me.
It's a skip.
I also want to say that like the second half of this album also needs more time with me because we were so tired when we listened to it.
Oh my gosh, we probably started at like 9 o'clock at night, like legitimately. Mm-hmm. So it was a long night.
Yeah. But yeah, honestly, like I have other like mid tier skips, but the only true skip for me is Robin. Right now.
I agree. For me in album one, I'm going to be skipping Fresh Out the Slammer. It's just move on.
Yeah.
And then we have to talk about Tour.
Yeah. Like how do we think this album's going to affect the tour? Is she going to update the set list and insert some content from this album? Or like, is it just going to be surprise songs?
I don't know. Part of me thinks if she is going to include this in the Eras tour, then Like, I do think she might just use these as surprise songs, like, incorporated. Like, I don't know if mm-hmm. that, if, like, I'm thinking logistics of the tour. That would mean they would need new set pieces, new costume pieces, new choreography, new mm-hmm. backing tracks, new live tracks, like, new music. New
lighting the, like, design.
That's a lot.
Right.
And in a short amount of time to prep. So I don't really know. But if she is, I'd imagine it would happen after Folklore, mm-hmm. and it would be like Fortnite. Obviously, it's like the lead single. Probably mm-hmm. Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? It's giving kind of like angry, you know, illicit affairs to me. I don't know.
Mm.
And then... I don't know, maybe something else that summarizes the second half.
I don't know what she would pick, but if I could pick which songs I want to see performed on tour as part of this set with like the, if it got the Folklore Evermore treatment,
mm-hmm.
I want My Boy Only Breaks His Favorite Toys, Florida, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? I Can Do It with a Broken Heart, which would be hilarious to perform that on the Eras Tour.
So meta.
So meta. And then The Black Dog and So High School.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could all be really fun when you bring in her dancers visuals.
I'm just thinking about the time. Like, does she have time to do a full other era?
Listen, some of those eras have room to cut, let's be honest.
Agreed. We can definitely cut one from a couple of the eras, and then it would make a whole
new
era. So
she could probably make room for like 3 or 4 songs. And she did just have this 2-month break.
Yeah.
So and she had a couple other breaks. So she and the dancers and everyone could have been working on this behind the scenes, getting it ready to roll out for this mm-hmm. next leg of the tour. Because isn't she really only like halfway done with this tour?
She has London, UK. I mean, yeah, she's pretty much going up until like next year. Like, so.
Yeah. And then who knows if she's going to keep going. I don't know, man. So, I don't know.
I just think it'll be interesting. I feel like the first night of this next round is going to feel like everybody's going to be watching, anticipating. So it'll be fun. That'll be an experience to see what she chooses to do. Mm-hmm. I just feel like now that we know what she was going through when she was performing some of those surprise songs and she was so mad.
Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. now I'm like,
yeah,
now we understand.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right.
Anyway.
Food for this album. Okay. We try to do this for every album. And I'm struggling. I'm really struggling. Okay. Because to me, this album is starvation. This album is manic, obsessive, can't think about anything except this man. I'm not eating. Mm-hmm. I'm not sleeping. This is like, I'm in it. I am knee deep. I don't care. I'm doing whatever he wants to do. I'll throw mm-hmm. my life away. Like the idea of like nourishing yourself while mm-hmm. in this album is unheard of. Like, so yeah. if I
this had, album's like drugs.
Yeah. It's about it's like feeling
drugs
like
and cigarettes.
Yeah. If I had to choose a food, it would have to be something mm-hmm. British because obviously the muses of this album are mostly two British boys. Mm-hmm. So I would choose like mashed potatoes, something that like, something that like you eat and it's like cold mm-hmm. mashed potatoes. It's not fresh, hot mashed potatoes. It's like mm-hmm. day old. You're eating it from the fridge because like it's there and you
mm-hmm.
feel a pang in your stomach. You're like, I should eat something. And then you just scarf it down. But it's like by no means a nourishing, vivid, beautiful experience to eat. So mm-hmm. yeah, cold mashed potatoes. So yeah.
Yeah, I was also struggling with this one, but I landed on what I'm calling the cocktail of snacks that I used to get when I was in college. and I was working on my thesis, and let's say it was like a Saturday, and I had to spend like the whole day in the computer lab working on stuff. Cause at that time I was doing a lot of digital painting. So I really just needed to hunker down in the computer lab and get shit done. And for some reason, my like go-to fuel for these days was a mocha latte from Starbucks. And this is back when I still had caffeine. So this was caffeinated. Okay. And then I had a big old bag of Swedish fish and another bag of chocolate covered raisins.
A healthy diet.
Yeah. Not nourishing in any way, just pure like sugar and caffeine.
Yeah.
And I would just be like, I would just have like good music on and I would just be like.
Right. It's the manic. It's the manic of it all.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not healthy, not nourishing, not helpful.
Yeah. Gives nothing, but it feels so good.
Yeah.
Similar vibes. And also side note, we saw Tay Tay cooking in the Fortnite YouTube short. We couldn't figure out what it was. She sort of blurred out like the bottom half, but she was like doing something with a spatula or.
Yeah, she was like mixing something together.
Yeah.
And where Travis leans in to kiss her.
Yeah.
While she's like, I almost wonder if it was like.
Were those the Pop-Tarts?
I don't think so. I feel like it was mac and cheese or something.
It looked like it was in a pot.
Something with rice, maybe? Yeah.
It was hard to tell. But we do see her icing the cinnamon rolls, so...
Yeah, so we do see her homemade cinnamon rolls.
So she doesn't stop. She be baking.
Yeah. She's cooking a lot when we're not seeing her in public.
I know. I feel like that's her little outlet. I love it.
It must be one of the things she does to feel like a normal human being.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I wonder if she also technically has a personal chef.
Oh, for sure. Like, there's no way she's cooking every meal for herself. There's no way.
Yeah. And I'm sure she's on some kind of diet for this Eras tour to just keep her strength up.
Yeah.
Make sure she's getting enough protein and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, she's running like a marathon every single night. So, yeah, absolutely. She's not like going home and having like, you know, a microwaved pizza. Like, she's maybe a little bit, because we did know that Travis, I don't know. Have we talked about this in the episode? We know that when Travis saw her, I forget what city it was, but he was spotted going to a Trader Joe's to get ice cream.
Oh, that was in Kansas City.
Yeah, which is like...
Yeah, it was when she was staying at his place after one of her shows.
Yeah.
And yeah, he went to get her like cookie butter ice cream or something.
Which is like, okay, so we know she'd be treating herself in between, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
So I would love to know Taylor's Trader Joe's favorites. That would be fun.
Mm.
And I do want to figure out what that ice cream is so we can obviously talk about it and eat it. So that's got to happen.
Oh, have you not had it?
No.
I have.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is an episode idea.
I think it was just the cookie butter ice cream.
Mm. I love cookie butter. So...
You'll like it.
Okay.
You'll like it.
I feel like the next episode is a toss-up for us.
Mm-hmm.
We could do it on the Cassandra / thank you, Amy Kim of it all, because we didn't even touch that.
Right.
We could do on cocktails for each song or foods for each song.
We could break down the Fortnite music video and discuss all of the 1975 parallels and Easter eggs that might be in there. And then we also kind of want to just like go through the album like in a couple, maybe like four sections and do like brief deep dives on each song and just touch on things that we didn't get to in this one. Because there's, I mean, 31 songs is too many. And I think she did want us to feel as unhinged as she felt.
Totally.
By the end of this album.
I heard someone call this album the anthology. It should have just been titled, "And Another Thing."
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then eventually we also want to do a full analysis of the In Summation poem.
Yeah.
Because we reread it again when we were done listening to the album, and I'm pretty sure that every line of that poem refers to a song on the album.
Yeah. So that would be a deep dive in connecting the poem to the songs within the album. So that would be mm-hmm. cool. So maybe we'll do a poll on social media. Maybe we'll just choose one.
We might do that. Yeah. You can also DM us and let us know what you're interested in. And we could do that too.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. What are your initial thoughts on Tortured Poets? Like, what's your favorite? What's your skip?
Which one made you burst into tears like me?
Yeah. What is it? For real. It's been a roller coaster. Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, should we wrap this thing up?
Let's wrap this thing up. All right. So thank you guys for joining us. It's been wild. We have so much to still uncover about Tortured Poets. So if you're not following us, give us a follow at Blank Plate Pod on TikTok and Instagram.
And you can check out our website at blankplatepodcast.com. Please send us an email at blankplatepod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 717-382-8313 to give us all of your thoughts, especially about this new album, Double Drop, that she gave us.
And until then, we've had the time of our lives with you.
And you know, it's time to go. So thank you for crying with me.
Yes.
That's what all we do here with Taylor Swift.
Yes, always.
Oh, gosh. All right. Bye.
Bye.